for some people, their spirituality, the deepest thing in their hearts really is the struggle for human rights or the struggle for social justice. And for other people who use the word spirituality, it's more about being in touch with my own vulnerability, with trying to be open to others without being, as they say, mindfulness, those kinds of very personal experiences. And trying to link the two together is quite important. That was the main purpose in my book. And I was trying to say that for some people, as I say, their deepest heart's desire is looking inward, and for other people, it's more looking outward. So, again, it's not so much a question of how do I link them. It's trying to take seriously that some people find that that is, in fact, what touches them most deeply, the struggle for human rights. And I think it's important to name that as a spirituality, even though they may not name it themselves a spirituality, because they associate spirituality with kind of lovey-dovey stuff, so to speak.
And yet for many people, trying to have any input into human rights or bringing about social justice, it can be so frustrating. And it seems to people who work in it talk about it being a constant struggle.
It is a struggle, and it's very hard on the spirit, so to speak, to keep going in the face of real difficulties. And that's why where there does come a link between the two aspects of spirituality, that unless you nourish your spirit and nourish your soul by, say, taking time out, walking by the sea or walking up on the hills or whatever way you nourish your spirit, you probably will get burned out if you're in the struggle all the time. I think it's quite important to do that. When I was working in South Africa in the old days a bit, I found that there was a tremendous linkage between the struggle for justice, where people were dancing, so to speak. There was this famous dance called the Toy Toy, where it was a taunting dance, where they were taunting the security forces, but at the same time it was a joyful dance, so that they managed to integrate the two, that there was a solidarity of this group, and we're doing this and we're enjoying the dance, and at the same time we're proclaiming that we're demanding our rights. Mm-hmm. Now, I think we need to link the two, find ways of linking the two in here in Ireland and elsewhere as well.
Now, for many people, I suppose, they are conscious at the moment, say, here in Ireland, there's the increase in the homeless. You know, I mean, how much can people do to work within something like that without feeling, as you say, totally burned out?
I find that an interesting question again. If you don't mind my mentioning, Sister Stanislaus Kennedy was the woman that launched my book. And I asked her to do that precisely because she seems to have found a way of doing that. She has been struggling, as you know, for probably 30 years trying to find to help people who are homeless. But she is the one that has written, I think, two books at least about the more personal side of spirituality. So she would be the expert on it. But I see her as a kind of a model of somebody that realizes that you need to nourish your spirit in order to be able to keep going. Otherwise, as I was saying, you're in danger of getting burned out.
And what about reaching out to people like that? How important is that to give them some sense of what you're trying to do rather than just, you know, be, for want of a better word, do-gooder?
I think that's the very kernel of it. Genuine human development is empowering people. And by doing that, we're breaking away from that idea of that we're the do-gooders and that we're able to help them doing things for people. It's more important to do things with people, and even better to help them to do it for themselves. And maybe, again, that's another way in which we can nourish our spirituality, because if I'm really working with poor people and really listening to them, then there will be times when I would be so moved by the depth of their experience, and not just bad experiences, but good experiences too. And the depth of their spiritual experiences will help me, and it won't be a question of me imagining that I'm superior to them.
Is that something perhaps we neglect sometimes, is to recognise that the people that we are working with have in fact their own spirituality?
I think that's really very important. One of the kind of phrases that I found helpful for myself when I was trying to think about how does God speak to us, so to speak, was God speaks to us through the unlikely person. And I think of in the scripture, can anything good come out of Nazareth, where people were saying that Jesus was a most unlikely person. And all through, it's in the Old Testament, that David was the youngest son, that he was very considered so unusual, so impossible for him to become the king, that he wasn't even brought in when the prophet was looking who would God pick to be the leader of the Jewish people. And he was the one that was out looking after the sheep. So they had to call him in. He was a very unlikely person. So time after time, we have that idea in the Old Testament and in the New Testament that God picks the unlikely people. And in somewhat the same way, we can say that people who are poor or people who are quiet or sitting down in the corner and saying nothing, which when they do manage to open up, they can blow your mind by the depth of what they have to say.